any size. Catch his seeds just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene of a crime, like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Wealth and fame, he's ignored. Action is his reward to him. Life is a great big bang up. Wherever there's a hang up, you'll find a Spider-Man.
Welcome to this very special Amazing Spider-Cast, because I'm going to add cast to everything. It's our mini panel of Spider-Man movies. I have put together a brain trust of Spidey fans. We have your friendly neighborhood Dan. I mean, wow.
Wow.
James.
Welcome. Bienvenue. Welcome.
We have your Venom, Chris.
Hello.
And Justin gets no name. I don't know, whatever. Actually, I was going to say Justin actually was the one who kind of encouraged this, because he was going on his little Twitter rampage about how the first film doesn't hold up that well. We'll get to that, I guess.
Spoiler, guys.
But yes, we are checking out here. We're checking out the first theatrical Spider-Man film released in 2002, directed by Sam Raimi, starring Tobey Maguire, Kristen Dunst, William Dafoe, James Franco, Rosemary Harris, and a bunch of other people. Who?
That's rude.
Well, I mean, usually when you say starring, you usually just talk about the first two people.
The hell is his name? The guy who plays J. Jonah Jameson,
J.K. Simmons?
Yeah, J.K. Simmons. He's kind of a big name.
I'm not saying he isn't a big name. I'm just saying that his screen time is just in 10 minutes this entire film.
But it's so good.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. I mean, he is the best part of this franchise, and he will continue to be the best part of this franchise through the first three Raimi films.
You know the interesting part about the film? Well, as far as, like, this Spider-Man franchise?
All of the
primary actors, except for the guy who played Uncle Ben, are still alive.
Well, that's not so weird. I mean, the film is only 12 years old. If this was like 20...
Aunt May was like 1,000 years old, though, wasn't she?
I don't think she died. Let me look that up.
No, she's still alive. She's
is
80.
She?
Yeah, she's 86. So she would have been about 74 or so when this
film
came out.
Yeah, she's still alive.
Yes. Well, Judi Dench is old as well. She's still in the Bond film.
Well, yeah, but she doesn't
look... She's into her 60s or so, I think.
Yeah, but she doesn't look like she's about to die.
Well, I mean, she does. Makeup does a hell of a job. I mean, nothing wrong about Judi Dench, but I think that's one of the reasons they killed off. Spoilers for Skyfall, one of the reasons they killed off. Was because she was having difficulty, like, reading the scripts and stuff, so...
I can't read anymore!
You know, as an actress, that's a big deal. Anyhow, since we are starting off on this fantastic tangent, I don't really want to go into the history of this, but it was about a decade of work trying to get this film on the big screen. I think at one point James Cameron was attached to it.
Yeah, he was one of the big names early, like in the initial like 80s and 90s work during it.
When they first got the rights, I think he was one of the big names attached to it.
Yeah.
I remember Freddie Prinze Jr. was also attached to be Spider-Man.
Oh, I'm glad that didn't work out.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a bunch of people attached to it. The only thing I know is from James Cameron pitch is that's where the organic web shoot has come from. That was something that he originally had in his script for Spider-Man, and that was something that stayed with this version of Spider-Man, which I actually do prefer, because I get it in the comic books, but it is just basically a story, a plot point. A lot of times, like, oh gosh, I ran out of webbing, I need to exchange my shoes. It just kind of eliminates that whole...
I wish we were talking about Spider-Man 2, because I just watched that as well, and that shit happens that entire freaking movie.
Yes.
And he has organic web shooters. It's like, why is this happening? It's so dumb.
We'll get to that in Spider-Man 2.
Like, how do you run out of something which comes out of your body?
Mm-hmm.
That's an easy question. But,
it's like running. It's like, I don't know. That's like running out of spit.
I mean, you can run out. Like, you can eventually have a dry throat where you won't spit as much. As we'll get to when we go talk about Spider-Man 2, it's mostly psychosomatic. His webbing in that film. And actually, his webbing in this film was kind of done like a dude hitting puberty as well. But
yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he has like the huge sticky room, and it comes out when the attractive girl is around.
Yeah, you know, as you do as a teenage boy.
As you do as a teenage boy who gets bitten by a radioactive spider.
Yeah, yeah.
Or genetically modified, or is that the?
It was genetically enhanced.
Yeah, it was genetically.
Okay.
Yes.
So yes, I guess from top to bottom, how did you feel with Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker, Spider-Man in this film?
Like back then or now?
Well, now. I mean, rewatching it.
He's very neutral, I think, in his delivery for most of the film. Does that make sense?
Sure.
He's got like that sort of like calm, sort of neutral voice where it almost doesn't have a tone, especially like in the narration at the beginning. Just like. Who am I? Are you sure you want to know? No.
Yeah, he's very monotone.
I'm not the only person about that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought it worked in his favor in this film because it's, you know, Spider-Man isn't a big bombastic character. He is kind of a, he's pretty kind of an even-toned dude. I think he does a good job at that. I was surprised going back to this film, because I actually do prefer Andrew Garfield in the role, and we'll get to that later on. Mm. So, you know, like, I was, because, you know, like, once you kind of, sometimes when you prefer something else, you go back and you think, why did I exist in the first place? But I do actually like his portrayal of Spider-Man in this film. He does a great Peter Parker.
I think he does a great Peter Parker. I don't think he does a particularly good Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's the Michael Keaton thing. There's Batman.
Yeah,
he's a good Bruce Wayne, but he's not entirely a good Batman.
I would have it the other way around, but...
It might not even be that, you know, he's not a good Spider-Man. It's that the writing wasn't good for Spider-Man
in most cases. The writing is sort of all
I definitely think he's...
All three films.
Yeah, I think he captures... Peter really well, especially in the early parts where he is this awkward beta male nerd who doesn't really have much in the way of confidence and is just sort of awkwardly trying to make it along. Like, I think he nails that really well. Like, his Spider-Man doesn't quite feel as much of a transition between the two, because I always see it as very much he does gain a lot more confidence and energy by putting on the mask in general, and I think he doesn't quite go all the way with that in his Spider parts. But as a Peter, I think he's great.
I guess part of that, and we'll transition to, I guess part of that is just kind of the threat level in this movie, and this is always a problem with the origins. Green Goblin is his biggest villain, so I understand why you would start with him, but it's also a really hokey one. I think Justin mentioned this when he was rewatching it, or James. Like, there's really no purpose for their altercations at the start of the film. Like, they just happen to be in the same area.
Yeah.
One's a good guy, one's a bad guy, or so they assume.
But there's no real, I mean... Yes, they're when they do meet up, but there's no altercations between the two of them until like over halfway through the movie.
Right.
Yeah, and again, that's kind of the origin.
Yeah, it's the origin of it, which I think actually works pretty well.
Yeah, I would say the first 40 minutes or so, like from like at least in terms of Peter focused stuff, from the very beginning up to say maybe when they have that initial montage of him doing Spider-Maning after Ben's death. I think all of that still works incredibly well.
It does.
Yeah. I think even the Green Goblin stuff with the Oscorp stuff and him kind of going crazy and not realizing he's doing all this stuff, even though Tony benefits him, so I don't know how he doesn't add up one and one. It works as well. I like how they kind of do it where they're kind of coming into their roles at the same time and similar incidents are happening to them that are causing them to become the hero and villain of the story. But like the first time they meet, he does bomb the Oscorp building. I didn't know if he was intending to kill his son as well.
I don't think so. If he did, he just didn't care. Because he is kind of a crackpot.
Yeah, pretty much. He's a pretty awful dad.
The weird thing about the goblin that I noticed is that every time he makes an entrance, he does it by blowing something up.
It's great.
Like,
yeah,
it's so stupid.
Is pretty true.
Well, it's like he could go in like through stealth, like just walk in through the Parker house and like choke May out. But no, he's just like, hey, what's up? I'm gonna blow up the wall.
They very much emphasize a theatrical aspect of it. Because,
right.
I mean, his first in-act goblin, apart from choking the guy when he takes the serum, is swooping in the guider and blowing up the enemy rival corporation's exosuit.
I don't know if you guys saw my tweet on, I think it was like Saturday or Sunday, but I was like, it's like they got Michael Bay to teach him how to make a like flashy entrance.
Yeah, I was curious, I guess going back to the May thing, like, how did he know she was in the room at that exact time?
I don't know.
I'm assuming maybe he had, like, goggles or something, he just looked in, and he's all like, eh, that's probably her. Or he probably tried it out in several houses and just got it wrong. It's like, whoops, wrong old woman. He just went down the phone book Terminator style.
Mm-hmm. Or no, he just, like, went to each house blowing up each room, was just like, no, wrong one. Like, you keep holding a May Parker, and they take, like, a little shaking point towards the right. It's just like, thank you. And he's just like, not again. I'm running out of stuff to blow up.
But, yes. he does know how to make quite an entrance. Something that didn't really work for me back then and still kind of iffy now is Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane.
You think so?
She doesn't ever seem to have much of a character.
Well, that's Kirsten Dunst. Like, she just the girl has no charisma.
There are scenes where her and Peter work well, but overall, it's just kind of meh.
I think it's partially script-wise. Like, I think she does an okay job, but she doesn't really have much to do that isn't directly connected to Peter. And I think that's something they really do a lot well in later films, but at least in this one, it very much feels like she's there. And while she does fine, the only times it really works are a couple iconic moments that, while are good on their own, don't really have a purpose beyond, hey, this is a really good bit. Specifically, of course, the upside-down kiss in the rain.
Right. Yeah.
MTV Award for Best Kiss.
The kiss that many couples have probably tried and failed to do.
I took notes as I rewatched it, and for that scene, I wrote down Kirsten Dunst boobs.
Well, I would say something, but we're all thinking that, so I think they even have that on the back cover of the DVD. Yep. Well, zoomed in to just see their faces, but yeah.
Yeah, we know. We all know. I think I was like,
just see their face.
Like, whenever that movie came out, I was like 9 or 10, and I saw him just like, nice.
Nice.
You're like, I don't know why I feel good, but this makes me feel good.
Yeah. It was a great
scene. like
that might be why I'm into redheads to this day.
Her role in that movie is weird because she spends most of it just like on her. Well, she spends most of it screaming her lungs out.
I was going to say, she spends most of it guy hopping. She starts off the movie dating Flash. She ends up dating.
Well, okay, that's not her fault.
That's not her fault.
That's what I call the Jean. Well, that's what I call the Jean Grey problem, where every dude just seems to be interested in her for no like legitimate reason besides the fact that she's
that's
the
because
most
there's no other. Exactly. There's no other women in the movie except for Aunt May.
Apparently.
Harry could have. Norman could have hit on Aunt May or something.
No.
Norman was that creepy.
You know, if there is one thing I never want to think about, it's Willem Dafoe, like, having sex. Which says a lot, because the most recent thing I saw him in was a movie that featured graphic hardcore
sex. Did you see Nymphomaniac?
Yes, though I'm pretty sure you don't see any of his nudity, though.
Thank God.
For somebody who doesn't want to think about it, you spend a lot of time about the faux sex I do.
Yeah, sadly, no Uma Thurman nudity either. That was a bit of a disappointment.
Meh.
But yes, moving on.
Willem Dafoe, God. His performance in this movie is just all over the place.
It's great. He's so nuts.
I think he works when he gets to go full manic insanity.
Yeah,
right.
Like, I think when he's when we're meant to believe he's a normal functioning human being, it doesn't work. But when he gets to go full nuts, it's like, okay, this is why you are here. Good choice.
My favorite part is near the end where like he's on his hands and knees and he's talking to the mask and it just looks like the stupidest thing ever.
I was gonna ask because it's the mask, there's the mirror scene. And then there's the Thanksgiving dinner scene.
Oh, God, the mirror scene is perfect just because, like, his creepy smile. I swear to God, he could have been the Joker.
And the way like, he's looking back and forth behind it, talking to himself.
Oh, but, yeah, God. I'm so glad they got that in the movie.
I also love the Thanksgiving scene where he looks like he's going to stab me.
All right.
Yeah, when you slap
his hand. He's got the look. She's just like, you're going to die. I'm going to kill you now.
I don't think it's an element that holds up. This is never an element people are. The costume's goofy as hell.
But it works. It works so good for the craziness that Defoe is.
Like, I think it worked with him.
Where, like, if you had just that Defoe performance in a different costume or just that costume with someone else, it wouldn't, like, it would be a mess. But with those two decisions just balance each other just right to be like the perfect thing, and especially when
so
like
great.
The scene with him talking to the mask, it's so perfect. It's like, okay, this is why you hired Sam Raimi to do this, which whenever I think back on it is really weird that they got the guy who made Evil Dead and Army of Darkness and were like, hey, you can make the Spider-Man movie. Like it's sort of like Peter Jackson directing Lord of the Rings. It's one of those weird choices that really paid off.
The scene I love the best though with the suit is when Peter goes into the burning house.
Oh yeah,
and he goes in to save the old woman and he like gets up there and Defoe has like he's in the full goblin outfit and he has like a scarf over and then he has the wig on top of the goblin head.
Can you imagine him just going to like some makeup place like yeah I need these. Like his full costume, and like he charges it to the Oscorp credit card.
Well, I would imagine he probably doesn't charge it. He probably bombs the place and take what he needs.
I just like to imagine like whoever designed that suit in the context of the movie is just like, yeah, let's make it like this with the big yellow eyes and the mouthpiece. It's just so fun to imagine that someone actually thought that would be a good idea for like armor.
Well, I mean, it's one. Okay, I will be honest. The Green Goblin costumes in comics is awful in general, and I think that
it's true.
I think it's just it's a really difficult costume to try to translate onto the big screen. If you kept it the same, it's a really gaudy color scheme, and really, he's mostly naked in it.
True. You were talking about bad Green Goblin designs. Have you seen the photos for Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Well, we'll get to that later. I was also going to mention one. I was also going to mention a new Goblin from Spider-Man 3 has a pretty awful one as well.
That one looks somewhat practical and not that bad.
I don't like the look of it, but it makes sense. Sort of.
Right.
This one makes sense in terms of the story. Like they were building the glider for the military and the armored suit. I mean, the fact that it's crazy green doesn't make any sense. But
right, can you imagine just like
that seems like we're building a prototype. Might as well be a little weird while we're doing it.
Right. Well, let's have some fun with it. Here's a green spray can.
Just like, why don't we just make it black? It has to be green. This is my design.
Why not? I mean, maybe it's his favorite color. I don't. I mean, it's the same reason that Peter designs his costume, and there's no reason given whatsoever why he designs it like that. It's not. It doesn't look like a spider. I don't know where blue and red comes from. He just decides like this works, and he designs this costume, and the first time you see him is in the rush.
The blue and red comes from the spider that bit him.
Okay, I thought he didn't know what the spider looked like.
It bites him and it jumps to the floor, and he like stares at it.
All the other ones in the environment too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think some of them were wrestling too.
You mentioned the wrestling scene, and that means we have to bring up two of what I consider the most important factors in this movie and why I will be surprised if an origin Spider-Man ever tops it. Bruce Campbell's cameo, of course, as the wrestling announcer, and the Macho Man himself, Randy Savage.
Macho Man's so good.
You mean Bones?
You're good with doing
it, Randy.
Yes.
That's the greatest thing I've ever seen him in.
And not only was it a great cameo, we also got an amazing rap verse when he did his rap album about it.
He did a rap album about it?
He did a rap album, and part one of his songs was like, I had a feature role in Spider-Man or something.
I did not know there was a Spider-Man track, and I'm going to have to check this out.
It's novelty
rap music is one of my favorite things.
It's from his diss track against Hulk Hogan.
Wow.
Yeah, that's all you need to say.
I'm going to Google this after.
Okay, I guess one more cast. We've already mentioned this already, but J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson.
Perfect.
The smartest thing they did.
It's been like 40 years, and there still has been very few pitch-perfect casting like this. He is just amazing in the role, and as far as I know, he's the only person from this film who continues to have that role, because he plays J. Jonah in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that's why they haven't like tried to cast them in him in the new movies, because they're like, well, we can't top that.
Well, he said he'd be open to doing it again.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if they're going to, I guess, do that. I don't know what they would. From what I've heard,
they're not doing it in this sequel.
Yeah, it sounds like something that they are trying to avoid, and we'll get to that later with the Amazing Spider-Man.
If they continue their theoretical one a year, I mean, he'll show up eventually.
Yeah, he's gonna eventually have to show up. You can't just dance around it.
Okay, the one thing that probably doesn't hold up, I don't even know if this counts, but there's really no plot in this film.
No, there's not.
Yeah, that's true. Like, as much as I think the first 40 minutes are perfect, after that, it sort of runs out of focus, and it's just a series of scenes, some good, some not so great.
Yeah.
And I think it basically, like, the rest of it runs by mostly on charm, and again, being a deliberately semi-silly movie along the way. Like, I would say mostly in the right ways.
Yeah, it does not take itself seriously. Like, it's a true comic book movie. Like, it's not trying to bring it to the real world. It's like, this is a comic book come to life.
Yeah.
And I mean, it still works. It's just really weird when you try to think like what happens. It's just like Spider-Man and Green Goblin fight a bunch, but there's really nothing connecting the fight.
Yeah, it was like, right, or it's like that scene where Goblin like asks him to join him. It's just like, why did you knock him out? Why not just kill him right now?
Well, he did ask
because
him to join.
Because he could rule this city.
Well, right, but I'm just...
Also,
while
we're
on
silly Goblin suits, the way he, like, leans down is beautiful. Like, just when he's, like, relaxing casually in that suit.
Right. It's like, he waited, like, 4 hours for Spider-Man to wake back up instead of just, like, punching him and taking him somewhere and then, like, forcing him to wake up and, like, sell him his whole, like, join me, we can rule the city thing.
And then he's still, like... You couldn't just take the mask off to find out who the hell was.
Everyone's the fun.
I know.
He's not trying to kill him.
This would have saved so much time. I like that Norman just automatically assumes that Peter is Spider-Man just because of one cut on his arm that could theoretically be from anything.
From the bike accident.
It's like just. Well, yeah, but I mean, that's a flimsy excuse, but still, he just automatically assumes.
Wait, why is that a flimsy excuse? Like, really, somebody gets cut, it happens. Like, you don't need a major excuse. It shouldn't be a huge talking point.
There's also the blood drop that they see in Peter's room, and...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's things that tie that together.
There's like a line of logic, but it's very much he's making some noteworthy jumps.
Right.
Yeah, because otherwise the film would have been like 3 hours long because they had at that point not built up anything. Because there's no story after that first half, so there's like they would actually have to build a story.
Just like Norman staring at his goblin mask, like making lists. Yeah. He was like, who could be Spider-Man? Peter Parker? No. Harry? Maybe. Mary?
I was about to say, not necessarily.
No. Yes.
Okay. That was actually going to be something I was going to mention. I really don't like the fact that they graduated him from high school so quickly. Like, he's in high school for like the first 30 minutes and then he graduates.
After he graduates high school. In the comics, isn't he usually like what, a sophomore or junior?
In the comics it's different. He spends like 50 years in high school, so
he's compressed into the last 10 years.
Okay. I was going to say, isn't it usually, like, accepted, like, in general continuity that he's, like, at least a junior or a sophomore?
When
he gets bit by the spider?
Yeah, he's usually, like, 6, because, you know, he's dating, cars, and other stuff. But, yeah, here it's just, like, I guess it makes sense because none of the actors are teenagers.
No.
None of them are teenagers.
The guy who plays Flash Thompson, the dude from True Blood, he really does not look like he's...
No, he does not.
No. I don't know if it's his body or like, the way that he carries himself, but he looks the farthest thing away from a teenager.
Yeah, they do not look like teenagers at all. So I guess it was wise in that sense of just getting them out of there as quick as possible. But yeah, part of his struggle is the fact that he's a high school student going through other stuff. Like, when you're a college student, especially when you get later on in the films, when he gets a job and, you know, different types of jobs, it's just kind of weird that, like, then he should just be responsible. Better time management, Mr. Parker.
Right.
So, I have to ask, Justin, why don't you think this film holds up?
I think mostly for me, it's the writing and the fact that it, and the effects. Like, the effects weren't good back then, but now I think that they really do not hold up, and you can tell that they're using effects.
I think the CG for Spider-Man 3 stands out, but I mean that's something I to expect.
And
why a lot of the action scenes in the movie take place at night,
right? And I
don't know if that's necessarily like this, that I think the CG is great, or if it's just because there's a lot of physical sets. Compared to the average modern blockbuster, like it could just be them like, oh hey, they're actually filming on a street, and I think they even did a couple of shooting on location in New York.
I think they did too.
Yeah, the Climax, for example, I used to work on that island. It's Roosevelt Island. They did shoot, and they still do. Amazing Spider-Man shoots on location here as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a part of their DNA. New York is no New York, so.
There's something else I didn't realize. I think that Tobey Maguire got too buff to be Spider-Man.
I could see that.
Especially since he's supposed to like still be somewhat fresh out of high school in his first months or whatever.
Yeah, and he's still not supposed to be a muscular dude. Like, even though he gets bitten by the spider, it doesn't make him muscular. It makes him strong.
He's supposed to have, like, a swimmer's build, kind of, or maybe, like, a sprinter. But this, he kind of looks like he'd be a... But this, he looked like he'd be, like, a football quarterback.
I don't know about quarterback.
Oh, no, he's still pretty small.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when you put him up against the guy who played Flash, like, he's still a small dude.
Well, yeah. that dude's also been jacked since the day he was born.
Yeah, I also think this goes back to the fact that none of them are like high school students.
Right.
So. he looks big, but he's not. He's still kind of a tiny guy in that world. Again, they should have stayed in there longer. I think Flash Friend looks smaller than him, but again, he has like no speaking voice or anything like that. So yeah, I guess final thing would be the fight scenes, which we kind of hinted at with the CG not standing up as much. And I also feel like the costume for the Green Goblin made it really limited. They don't really do much hand-to-hand stuff.
Yeah, except for the final battle. like, which is actually pretty brutal.
It's true. Way more brutal than I remember.
Yeah, I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, I don't remember like, the beating like, the hell out of church. Each other like this. Yeah. Yeah, it's
in that
church.
Like, what the action is that?
The goblins throwing them around.
Yeah,
I do like that most of the action is mostly just ways of Peter saving people from things, and there's a lot of acrobatics to it. Like, I tend to find that a bit more engaging in superhero movies than fight scenes, since, like, admittedly, as much as I like a lot of superhero movies, there aren't many that I think have genuinely great action. Like,
yeah.
I think that's what... Like, if there's one thing that I think can be said about Cap 2 above most other superhero movies is that the action is consistently great. Though that could just be because it switched far more over to more realistic stuff, so it feels more tangible.
Yeah, and again, out of that is just the, like, when, you know, Batman is always accused of that. The imitation of the costume of having somebody actually moving it doesn't make the fight scenes that engaging. Because, like, he punches and kicks and stuff like that. Same thing with the Avengers. Like, they have some, like, they have cool set pieces, but when you think about the actual fighting, it's nothing special.
Right.
Yeah, it's they tend to be more built around interesting beats of, hey, how do I solve this problem? Oh, here's how I do it. And I pull it off, and it's like, yeah. And that tends to work more often than not in the better superhero movies, including this one, I'd say.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's enjoyable fight scenes. I don't think it's anything special, but it's enjoyable, and it makes great use of both of their powers. It's just really weird that it's so limited to the hand-to-hand stuff throughout most of the film.
How do you guys still feel about the the final battle, or like, quote unquote, the final choice, and the part where the New Yorkers come to help?
Oh no! So I wrote that down. That the New York teamwork thing, that it's cringeworthy.
You think
it was really, really bad.
It was really kind of awful back then, but I went with it. Now it just seems really dated.
Yeah.
It definitely comes across as very heavy-handed, especially considering, I mean, they did a lot of postponing and re-editing post 9/11, and it feels like some of that sort of ended up
bleeds into this.
Yeah.
You messed with all of us.
Yeah, like, I think they do stuff like that works far better in the second one, which we'll get to, but here it comes across as really heavy-handed and kind of forced.
Yeah, because it's not even earned in this film. Like, get what they're going for, but, like, at no point do you see, like, the citizens of New York kind of going for Spider-Man in the sense that, yeah, we're going to put our eyes up for him. Like,
well,
they think he's a hero, but...
Well, it's like the last thing that they did mentioning, like, the connection between the city, like, New York and Spider-Man, is that people thought that he blew up the Daily Bugle. And then they just left it alone. So, like, them showing up on the bridge, that just more or less comes out of nowhere. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing I really do love about it is the callback that we get in Spider-Man 2, which is an amazing scene. But yeah, we'll get to that next week.
Oh,
I have things to say next week.
Yeah, I still need to find
a lot of things
Spider-Man.
To say next week.
Dude.
2 weeks should be most interesting.
two weeks from now we do Spider-Man 3?
Yes.
I think that'll be slightly more controversial than you'd think, but still probably unanimous-y. Maybe. A little bit. We'll get there.
We'll see.
I haven't seen it since it came out.
I saw it last night. I really need to find my Spider-Man 2 DVD.
You do. You can borrow mine.
Yeah, cool.
We can force you to watch. There's probably something on my shelf that Earl yells about you for not seeing.
It's not that hard to find something that Justin hasn't seen before.
How about, that sounds like a good idea. How about we don't do that?
Justin comes to my house over the summer.
How about we talk about this later on? Final thoughts on the original Spider-Man film.
I still like Hero by Nickelback. That still is a good song to me.
That song is simultaneously awful, yet I love it anyway. Like,
right?
It's reached a weird point where I'm like, okay, I've listened to this so many times that I can't tell if I'm being ironic or sincere, so I'm just going to go with I like it, I think.
I still prefer Vindicated.
No, well, that's a good song. Well, that's still a good song. But it's one of those things where, like, for a while you kind of, like it ironically just to mock it, and then after, like, a few months you're just like, yeah, this is an alright song. And it's, like, a few months later you start singing along with it.
It's so unabashedly earnest in a super cheesy way that I can't help but love it. And there are so many people that take it at face value at hundreds of YouTube music videos set to this with footage from Sonic 2006.
Oh my God,
I mean,
no.
You know they're there. There are dozens of them.
Don't lie to me.
Every franchise you can think of, even SWAT Cats, has music videos set to Hero by Chad Kroger.
I'm going to look for that tonight.
I am.
That does remind me, though, one thing we didn't mention in Roy. I do have the Danny Elfman score, the theme song for this.
Yeah, the music is, the actual original music is really, really good.
It's still, like, sticks in your head after you hear it the first time. Like, as soon as I started hearing it, I'm just like, I remember this.
Yeah.
And I tend not to be a big fan of Danny Elfman, but I think he does do a good job here.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you think about the stuff we kind of got with the other Marvel films, because a lot of them don't have very memorable scores.
No. Like, especially of the current cinematic universe stuff. Like, I think you've got Captain America and a little bit in Avengers, and I think those are the only ones that really stand out.
I think the new Iron Man one stands out.
What,
the one that ended Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That one definitely stands out. But it's like Thor's, I couldn't tell you.
I could tell you the Captain America song from the first film, but that's not the actual.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, great music in this. So, any other final thoughts?
I feel like outside of the New York thing, it feels a little dated. There's a reference to. Jonah's asking, he's trying to get pictures of Spider-Man, and he actually, he goes, we can get Julia Roberts in a thong, but, like who goes, hunts for Julia Roberts in a thong now? Like, who even knows, I mean, I guess there are some, twisted folk out there that are looking for that, but it's like, that just seems like something that, we're gonna grab a big-name star at the time, and
You know what really dated it for me?
The concert?
The Macy Gray thing?
Yeah.
That was tough, man.
No, not Macy Gray, but they showed Singular when the Goblin is flying around, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, you guys were a thing.
Yeah, a lot of the music choices make it very much feel like unquestionably 2002, for better or worse.
Right.
That's never something I mind a lot in movies.
You're like, when Peter's shopping for the car, and you look at all the cards in the paper, it's just like, wow, those all look definitely not from this, past decade.
Yeah, but that's just sort of part of it. I mean, Ghostbusters feels like a movie from 1984.
Right.
And, I mean, it sort of should. Like, there are some things that feel deliberately out of time, and some of them feel like they are of a specific era.
Yeah, I just thought the concept usually stands out to me, because even back then, I didn't break it.
Yeah, it was like,
I don't even know who
Macy Gray
was at the time.
I still don't know who she is.
Is she still even alive?
I think she's still alive, and apparently she's still kind of popular. She was actually in something this past week or something.
No way.
I heard her name mentioned, but yeah. It was whatever. It's a very odd choice, but I guess they didn't even really need that scene in there. And, you know, this is an aside, but kids always annoy me. Anybody who does this in films, he sees the thing falling on him,
oh,
and he just stands
there
looking at it.
That annoyed me so much. I wanted my kid to die.
Spider-Man literally has time to say, hey, kid, look out, and he
still
doesn't move.
Well, to be fair, he didn't hear him.
But he didn't. My point is, he didn't move. Somebody had a full time to say, he's just like, when is this going to hit me?
His mom even said, kid, get out the way. You know what? If I was Spider-Man, I would have let that kid die.
I would have too.
See, that's why you're not Spider-Man.
Well, dude, come on though. Like, it was right there in front of him. He could literally see it. It was not like he was It's not like he was distracted or anything. He was looking dead at it.
God, the other thing that I noticed at the very end, when they're in the graveyard, there's a after Harry kind of like leaves and MJ and Peter are there, they're talking and she kisses him, and it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Tobey Maguire is like the worst kisser on the planet, but he looks like he's kissing a mannequin, and like his mouth is just kind of open, and like and it zooms in on it, and it's like
his facial expressions throughout the entire trilogy or something to behold his crying face is still one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
I think one thing I love that we'll get to in the second one is the way when he looks when he's surprised, his eyes are really good at that, like they just get huge, and it's like, oh. Shit.
Oh god.
We'll get to that.
And, the writing in this movie is just all over the place. But one of like the stupidly like most stupid and corniest lines in the film is at the end where he's just like, "I had a father. His name was Ben Parker." It's just I just couldn't not laugh at that.
Yeah.
Or like the look on Willem Dafoe's face when he mustn't die, just like, oh.
To be fair, I still quote that whenever I talk to friends. Godspeed, Spider-Man. It's a great line. It makes no sense, but whatever.
It doesn't, like, at all.
It's kind of like this. Go ahead.
No, when they're at the funeral, two things. When Harry's just like, I swear on my father's grave, Spider-Man will pay. But like. The look on his face that he gets and the way that he delivers that line, they just don't match up at all and they come off really comical. And then before Mary Jane kisses Peter, it's just like, I love you, Peter Parker. It sounds really bad. It reminded me of Attack of the Clones when What's-Her-Face and Anakin are just like, hold me like you did on Naboo. It's just so bad.
The whole, like, Harry getting revenge on a Spider-Man thread that peels throughout the entire trilogy. Mm. It's just so crazy. it's like Harry just goes from like kind of, normal, neglected rich kid to just complete asshole lunatic like, over the three films. Like it's,
and the butt, it could have prevented it all if he had told him that night.
I still want to know why he didn't tell him. I swear it was like, what, 2-3 years? And he just didn't say a word about it? Was it?
Because Spider-Man...
Between Spider-Man 2 and 3?
Between Spider-Man 1 and 3 is about 4 or 5 years, because they graduated college and moved on and stuff like that.
Okay, but still, like, why didn't his butler tell him at any point during those years, be like,
I know!
Yeah, so your dad's kind of crazy, and he killed himself.
I get not wanting him to think his dad killed, like, his dad went crazy, but when he started to see him kind of go into the deep end, you would think he would take him aside or something
right.
like that.
I was like, I wonder if the butler, like, ever saw like, Doc Octopus, like, in the mansion sometime during Spider-Man 2. He's just like, I should probably tell Harry about his dad, or I can wait to see how this all plays out. I'm gonna wait to see how it all plays out.
Or maybe you're supposed to marry Jane. Don't tell Harry. Tell Harry.
What is fair, one thing? Don't tell Harry. What is so special about Harry that he can't be told stuff?
Because he's James Franco. Boyfriend.
He's James Franco. He's high all the time. You basically want to be really careful around him. Like,
yeah.
Just
and while Mary Jane was working, and while Mary Jane was working her job, he was hitting on some 17-year-old on Instagram.
Well, it would have made more sense in this film. He would have been around 17 in the movie.
James Franco, only Willem Dafoe could be your dad.
The thing is, they don't even look alike at all.
True. No one looks like Willem Dafoe.
Well, to be fair, you have no idea what his mom is like. So
I don't think he has a mom. I think you just sort of created him through... through
osmosis.
Yeah, he just... Wait, that's a food thing, but sure.
No.
He just sort of peeled off.
It's like Norman just created him from the ether. It's just like, I want a son. And then James Franco pops in.
I want a dad!
He just like made a blood sacrifice to the marijuana gods.
Can you imagine, like, they hug afterwards, and then, like, 2 seconds later, Willem Dafoe's like, all right, get away from me, I hate you now. And then James Franco's like, I'm sad now. And then Tobey Maguire sort of like, let's be best friends, okay. Da-da-da-da-da.
No, it would go ba-da-da-da-da-da-da, like that, because, you know, Spider-Man.
Right, I forgot.
Okay, now we're going to wrap here.
Okay, wait, one more thing. I think this movie has the shortest Stan Lee cameo of all the Marvel movies.
I think the original X-Men might have a shorter one.
Was he in the original X-Men one?
Yeah, I think he's the guy, he sees the senator on the beach, and that's his cameo, I believe.
Oh. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, what's his appearance in this one? Because I remember him too.
He
pulled somebody out of the way.
Fight.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought that was the one he
not
had.
Not little kid, though.
Yeah, it was just someone from wreckage. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then, if that's the case in X-Men, then I take back what I said. But this one seemed like a really quick blink and you miss it.
Yeah, I think that's how they all started off, and then they started to get some more lines, and then they kind of in this running bag.
Yeah, basically, I think it was once people started figuring out, once mainstream audiences started realizing he was important, they started playing them up quite a bit more.
I wonder if he just walked into, like, just really just, like, walked on set and no one was kind enough to tell him that he had to leave. They're just like, hey, who's that extra? Oh, it's Stanley. Okay. We'll keep it in. Just like, how does he keep finding us? I swear. It's like he's in Guardians of the Galaxy. He's just like in a spaceship snoring. Just like, I didn't make this, but I'm still in it.
Yeah, I think he said he's actually not going to appear in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like,
I know
I'm
sad.
He isn't in.
I know I'm sad.
He's not in Captain America 2, is he?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, when
he's in a thing that I'm not going to say because some of you are fool enough not to use. Okay, to be fair, I think most people listening to a series of podcasts outlining the Spider-Man movies would have seen it, but just in case.
Spoiler alert, right about now.
What? No. Okay, so final thoughts. What do you give this film out of 7 because of our very special numbering system?
Wait, who goes first?
I'll go first then. I will give it a 5. I think it holds up for the most part. I do know the second one's better, so I want any room to go up. There's pretty no plot here. There's no story. There's nothing that kind of binds it together after the back half, other than the fact that it's an origin story. And the costume still looks goofy. That New York moment is kind of hacky. It is kind of dated in some regard. It's still a really enjoyable movie at the moment. So. James?
I think I'm going to go with a 5 as well. Like, the first 40 minutes are perfect, and the rest after that, it's very much, it ranges from pretty great to slightly embarrassing.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm with you guys on the 5. I think it's entirely enjoyable to watch, and it's still fun. Yeah, it's goofy and corny, but it has, like, this charm to it that makes it, you know, quite fun to watch. So I'm good with 5.
And Justin?
Yeah, I'm with you guys on that. It's goofy, it's silly, but it still has, like, that charm and that childhood nostalgia. And it's still good, especially when he's doing some actual web swinging, particularly near the end.
Yeah. That's always, it always seems like, it's roasting and always seems like such great fun.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I want to thank you gentlemen for joining us this week, and we'll be back next week with Spider-Man 2. We use Willem Dafoe, but we do gain an actual actor.
James Franco?
No, James Franco hasn't acted yet. Alfred Molina as Doc Ock. So we'll catch you for that.
I'm so high, I can hear heaven. I'm so high, I can hear heaven. Oh, but heaven, no heaven, don't it mean? why.